podcast.
So avian flu or bird flu is a notifiable animal disease that mainly affects birds. The last few years have seen a number of outbreaks across the UK, and this year there have been numerous reports of dead wild bird carcasses washed ashore with suspected bird flu. This is a disturbing situation and the cause of lots of concern, particularly on some of our islands and the Kintyre coast. But here to say a little bit more about the disease and the advice that we're giving in relation to it is Alan Morrison and David Kerr. So with me to talk about avian flu is Alan Morrison, Regulatory Services and Building Standards Manager, and David Kerr, Senior Animal Health and Welfare Officer. So first place to start is probably to say to people, what actually is avian influenza, to use a technical term, or bird flu, most people might refer to it as. Alan, do you want to give us a sort of overview?
I'll kick off and maybe David will have more detail that I want that I may not be able to add. But avian influenza is a virus, and it's a virus similar to viruses that humans get, whether or not it's cold, flu, COVID, coronavirus. But it's a specific virus that affects birds, and the impact to it is serious, and in many cases it gives rise to fatalities in birds. It's not, from a public health perspective, it's low risk in terms of passing to humans, and the risk would mainly be to poultry workers and people who are working in poultry establishments. It cannot be passed by foodstuffs, so consuming the birds will not give rise to any illness in humans. But so it's principally bird, hence its title, avian influenza, and it's global. So it's impacting many countries as it stands at the moment. I don't know if David wants to add to that.
Yeah, bird flu's been around for a long time, and the low pathogenicity avian influenza. What happened in, I think it was about 2006, it first emerged in China, with this highly pathogenic version, which is extremely infectious, and with within an infected group, something like the high 90s of mortality comes with it. It's very quick, it kills very fast in large numbers. And it's been building up over the last few years. It took a while to work its way out of the Far East and got into general circulation in the migratory birds. The pattern in the UK and Europe for a while was very clearly seen. You had the two countercyclical migratory patterns of wild birds, and it followed them. You had outbreaks in commercial premises and wild birds. And then when the migratory birds went away, it went with them. Well, this winter we've had a huge challenge. The number of infected premises went through the roof, and clearly the disease challenge was such that we can't get rid of it. It's got into the native wild bird population. It's got into established, as we know only too well, because of the problems of carcasses washing up on the beaches. And that's why we're facing a real problem just now. We haven't got rid of it. We haven't had the break in infection, which up until now has proven to be the case. 2022 is a game changer in terms of dealing with avian influenza.
Yeah, and I know people are, been quite concerned about the situation. What is the current situation in Argyll Butte?
Argyll Butte, if you can call it, fortunate, we haven't had any confirmed outbreaks in Argyll Butte. Looking at our industry at the moment, we've got about four or five poultry establishments in our area. The majority thereafter are domestic poultry keepers. So we haven't had any outbreaks in our area. We have had confirmed cases of avian influenza identified in dead bird carcasses that have been collected and analysed from Kintyre, from Isla, and also from Mull. So it's definitely in the wild bird sector, and it has been identified in our area. I think we're fortunate because in the other areas, principally England, there are still outbreaks occurring at this moment, and that requires formal infection control measures to be put in place to deal with that. But that situation again, Butte, However, it doesn't mean to say nothing's happening. We're still getting dead bird carcasses washed up on our shores. We're still issuing advice through our website, advising the public of what steps they must be taking and keeping up to date. David's been contacting the porterkeepers in our area to make sure that they've got maintained biosecurity measures in place, because obviously it could happen in a Highland Butte, and I think we need to be vigilant of that.
So David, say perhaps you can say more about your role in that, because there's obviously the disturbing situation in wild birds that Alan's talked about, but in terms of poultry keepers and that biosecurity, there's obviously a whole sort of heavily regulated sort of situation around the commercial sector, but then there's also advice for your sort of domestic poultry keepers and things as well, isn't there?
There is. The commercial producers, and with very few of significance who have several thousand birds, we've made direct contact with them, but obviously they are very, very conscious of the threat to their business and are very stressed, actually. To be honest, particularly most of them are coastal areas, and there's a potential for substantial financial loss to them. The main way of communicating we've been dealing with has been through the council website, and that has a degree of, it's updated regularly, it puts in contact with the Scottish Government advice, which is obviously what we're following. I've had a lot of dealings with members of the public who have wanted advice about whether to lift dead birds, and please don't, because the evidence is that there's very little benefit to doing so. I've dealt with people individually. There's still quite a lot of regulation extant, but it's been eased back, I think, for practical reasons. One of the issues that we're going to have is that currently there's only an obligation on poultry keepers with more than 50 birds to register with the government. Without even bothering to get a crystal ball out, I strongly suspect that is going to change in the lessons learned from this. There's a lot of discussion going on, because amongst the epidemiologists, amongst the vets, and amongst civil servants as to how we proceed. And I'm very firmly of the opinion it's very likely that all poultry keepers will be asked to register, because we've got a current and ongoing hazard, as far as we can see, a biohazard. It's what I would also say to people who are keeping poultry: I would expect to get another housing order in the autumn. We've had one every year for the last few years. So for people who've got their domestic poultry, and some people have taken this to heart already, set about making sure you can house your animals with their welfare in mind. Because a lot of the more traditional free-run poultry had a shed they were shut in at night, and that's it. Well, that's fine. But as my friends and colleagues and members of the public have said to me, if you're shutting them in that situation for weeks on end, the animal's welfare suffers, the human welfare suffers, because they're cleaning them out on a daily basis, and it's pretty disgusting. So while we don't have a housing order in place, I would advise anybody who's planning on keeping a backyard flock to look at how they're going to keep them if a housing order comes in, because I'm pretty sure one will arrive somewhere along the line in the autumn and winter.
And just explain to people who might not be au fait with the terminology, what's meant by a housing order? What does that mean people have to do?
Housing order means that your animals, your poultry, are not allowed to run free range around your garden or farm. They've got to be restricted within a secure hen house and run. If so long as the run can be secured against contact with wild birds, it's not impossible to do. You can use fine mesh over your run and give enough room and ideally make provision to move that run around so the ground doesn't get sick. But also be aware that when you're using fine mesh to exclude wild birds, this is vulnerable to weather conditions. And I know people who did this, and then you got a storm, and let's face it, our girl is not exactly innocent of getting storms. This gets ripped up. Now, that is not the point to say, oh, well, it's ripped up. You're going to have to either ensure that that can't happen or replace it as quick as you can. It's a real nuisance, and some people have said they'll give up keeping poultry in these terms, and I can understand that. But if you are going to keep them, you've got to factor bird flu and bird flu precautions into. It'll be lovely if it disappears. if it does through natural resistance developing, it's going to be a slow process if that happens, and I have no reason to believe it will. There, currently, there's a lot of work being done from the commercial premises on vaccination, but it hasn't achieved a valid vaccine yet, as far as I know. There's a lot of wind to be made by whoever can manage to do that. But it's not there just now. It's not an option for us. And the reservoir in the wild birds is such that we've got to be cognizant of the risk if you're keeping domestic poultry.
And is there anything else apart from looking at housing the birds that people can do to help minimize the risks at all, David?
Good biosecurity is one. This is one of the if you're keeping poultry and if you're going to be in contact with other people's poultry, and that could be for bird fanciers, there's a lot of restrictions on gatherings of birds just now, which is best done through APHA. But if you are in the business of being a poultry fancier, you're going to visit other people's poultry, think very hard. Are you wearing the same clothes that you were dealing your own animals with? If so, you shouldn't be. Have you got dedicated disinfectable Wellington boots that you're using when you're dealing with them? For somebody who, it's common sense. If you're in the business of where you're going to be in contact with other people, other people's poultry, you're a potential vector by transferring dung material. These viruses are, particularly as the air gets colder and wetter and darker, the virus has greater survivability. We had hoped that when the hot weather would have eliminated, and it probably has softened it. It probably has actually curbed the rise. God knows what it would have been like if we'd had a cold, wet winter, wet summer down south. But one of the things, I'm being fairly cautious, careful what I'm saying here, but it looks, my colleagues in the veterinary world say that there does appear to have been quite evidence of some of the outbreaks may have been occasioned by bad biosecurity between poultry keepers. And that's something we want to avoid. It would be very easy for that to happen, particularly if people are careless of their control and don't think about themselves as a possible vector.
So it's common sense sort of things.
Yeah.
Alan?
Yeah. No, I think David's quite right in what he's saying. I think the key thing I would be advising people is that avian flu is out there. There's a potential of it. And I think they should follow the advice that David's just given. And it's obviously outlined on our website, and also in the Scottish Government's website as well, and we've got links to that. I think that if you're keeping poultry, whether or not, even in a domestic situation, I would encourage people to register, and that means to get regular updates on what the situation is with the outbreak and the situation. But more importantly, it means that should anything happen, we as a council may be able to contact you and give you specific advice in an outbreak situation. David's covered it. Look after your poultry. Try and minimise the contact with wild birds, and particularly the feed, and make sure that doesn't happen. I think there's an added point, Pippa, in terms of even if you don't keep poultry, if you're walking along beaches and see dead carcasses, and you will see dead carcasses because they are being washed ashore, do not touch them. Leave them well alone, and by all means report that they're there to the DEFRA website and hotline, but what I would say is that leave them there, do not touch them, and don't allow any animals that you've got to come into contact with them as well. Unfortunately, the council would love to be able to uplift all dead carcasses, but one, we're unable to do so, we don't have the resources to do so, and the website definitely advises leave in situ, and it'll degrade through natural causes and also sunlight if the sunny weather still continues. Obviously, that's the advice. Everyone's got a role to play in trying to minimise this and hopefully keep it away from our gangland here.
So a couple of things then, Alan, where, if people want to register, where do they register? And maybe it's worth just explaining the relative roles of the council and DEFRA on this, because I think it's a bit confusing one for people.
OK. I think I'll take the last one first, because I can remember what you were asking. The first thing I would say is that DEFRA is a government department agency, UK-wide, deals with agricultural issues and fishery issues. And in the event of, well, as we stand at the moment, they take responsibility for the response. So in the event of an outbreak, maybe just look at that. In the event of an outbreak, then DEFRA, or in Scotland, their agency, which is Animal Health and Plant Agency, take control and they manage the outbreak. Our role as a local authority is the local response and to carry out the enforcement of the controls that are in place. So many, many outbreaks in England, they have got controlled areas, zones that you can't transport poultry. They've got restrictions across, was it 5 kilometre distance areas or radiuses from the sites. And our role as a council is to maintain and ensure that that is being complied with. And if it's not complied with, then to take the enforcement action to try and achieve compliance. So that's probably the role. In terms of the advice, our website creates a good link, and it's an online link to the DEFRA site where you can register and register yourself as a keeper of poultry. And I think it outlines how many do you keep. And you don't need to be exact, but obviously how many do you do, because it will change through time. And I would say that is a key point. And in terms of advising DEFRA on any dead carcasses, there is a number, and I'll read it out. It's 03459335577. And it's on the website if anyone can't remember that. But that is to report any dead bird carcasses and allows DEFRA to come, should they wish, to sample and obviously analyse for avian influenza. But I would add a piece of caution there to the public that DEFRA are not coming along and sampling every single case that's reported to them. So I think there's some misinformation out there at the moment that the public expect DEFRA to respond to a phone call of dead carcasses. They won't do that. And obviously that creates some concerns in the community. But I think if they report it, then they're doing the right thing.
Yeah, so essentially DEFRA make the rules on this, and we enforce them with local keepers of birds. And as you say, part of that phoning in the information is essentially to get a national picture, yeah, intelligence of what the situation is, so that they can frame that response. It's not necessarily we will come and test, yeah, every bird, because clearly the way you and David have described it, that's on the scale that wouldn't be feasible for DEFRA, yeah, either to do that.
Yeah. But you've said it, you've summarised it better than I could, Pippa, but I think the situation is that obviously we are monitoring the situation. If dead birds continue to be washed ashore, then as long as it's reported, it provides intelligence about what the situation is with the virus in the UK.
And David, previously we had an avian influenza protection zone, or an AIPZ, but that's now been lifted. What did that mean when it was enforced?
When it was enforced, it included the housing order. It included, right, a movement restriction. Any disease has a multi-agency response. The APHA used to be the State Veterinary Service. It's gone through various different acronyms, which, as I'm getting old, I keep getting confused with. But they're the veterinary specialists. They're the people who link in with the EPIC team, who are the epidemiologists. And they're the people that, I suppose, are closest working partners with the local authority. As Alan said, we do the enforcement for them if that's needed, which so far has been at the level of serving notice on people to comply and do things with us here. And hopefully people will continue to cooperate with us when we do serve notice on them. As Alan was rightly saying, you can contact the DEFRA helpline, but as you obviously cottoned onto, the purpose of the information about the wild bird infection is to allow, along with weather conditions, along with migratory patterns, to allow them to predict where the highest risk areas are for domestic, for commercial premise infection. I suspect probably that their priorities will have moved considerably, because we now know that it's ubiquitous in the wild bird population, so it's an ever-present hazard. So I would, the evidence suggests that they are not doing a great deal of sampling in remote areas. The sampling that's been done on the islands has actually been done by local bodies, really, hasn't it, rather than DEFRA recently. We were operating under environmental directives from the likes of Nature Scotland. And that's, they have their own specific interests over and above the disease. Obviously, they're concerned about the levels of fatality in key breeding colonies and things like that. You may well have seen the films of the Bass Rock, you know, which was, I think, one of the biggest gannet colonies in the world. And come from those parts, it used to be quite a sight. It was completely white with gannets. It wasn't white with gannets at the end of the breeding season. There were just the odd pair here or there. So there's been really high casualty rates. And that's a real concern, obviously, to Nature Scotland and other groups like that.
Yeah, really concerning to see that and to see the impact on those colonies. I've been lucky enough to travel to places like the Isle of May and see the fantastic puffin colonies and things, and it's a dreadful thought to think of the impact it's having on those. But as you say, very important for local keepers to take all those practical steps that you've described, David, just to try and minimise any transfer of this as much as possible. But and do you want to just run through the advice that people can find on our website in terms of when to report birds, just so we can reiterate that once more? I know we've been trying to get it out through all sorts of sources, but
the basic advice that we've got on just now is it links into the Scottish Government. I would hasten to point out that we're working with the Scottish Government advice system. We're not putting our own spin on anything, and that if you become aware, if you're suspicious of disease or if you become aware of carcasses, use the DEFRA helpline. If you suspect disease in your own poultry, then either contact the local authority or APHA as soon as possible. We've had a lot of situations, because it is something you have to remember, birds are vulnerable to lots of other diseases. They die and become sick from other things too. So we've had quite a few sort of rather worrying nights, usually, because people tend to report them late in the evening for some reason, wondering what the heck's going to happen. And with the assistance of local vets working with the APHA and others, we've been lucky. But what I would say is, any suspicion, if somebody is keeping poultry and if they have any suspicion that there's something untoward, particularly where you've got waterfowl, they seem to be the most prone, where you've got waterfowl mixed with hens, even more so, then, well, first of all, ask your own veterinary surgeon for advice if you're not sure what it could be. But if you're suspicious of bird flu, if you're getting rapid casualties or anything like that, get in contact with the authorities as soon as possible. And don't let those birds out of wherever you've got them. Make sure you're using proper biosecurity, which is even simple as cleaning your hands when you've collected eggs, which you probably do anyway, I would imagine. But, you know, it's, as you said earlier, Pepper, it's a lot of it's common sense. I'm as guilty as anybody. We get into routines, don't we?
Good advice. Thank you, David. And thank you, Alan. So hopefully that gives a bit of clarity for people and that the situation will improve a little more and we'll get on top of this. We'll hopefully, with that advice, people at least be ready for the winter if we do see some restrictions come in place. So thank you both for that. I know you're both very busy responding to these sorts of issues. So very small team trying to keep on top of this. So thank you for all the work you do on that and that valuable advice.
Okay, thank you very much.
So just to restate that advice again, if you do find a dead bird, you can call the DEFRA, that's the Department of Environment, Food and Rural Affairs helpline, on 03459 335577. They ask you to notify them if you find one or more dead birds of prey or an owl, three or more dead gulls or wild waterfowl, so swans, geese and ducks, or five or more dead birds of any species. And the advice is not to pick up any dead or visibly sick birds if you come across them. If you're looking for more information, you can go to the Council's website, argyle-bute.gov.uk, and search bird flu guidance. And all the advice is there, with links to DEFRA's web pages
and where you can register as a keeper of birds. Thanks for listening.
Pippa's Podcast.